2703.
Take your choice. The best new car deals in America. Jack Castellaneta at Formula Nissan says take your choice from over 100 new Nissans and get year-end pricing you won't find anywhere else. Jack, how can you do it?
We keep things simple, and simpler means cheaper. Great selection, great prices, and with special year-end discounts, you can forget factory sticker. Forget dealer markups. You get the simple year-end clearance price.
0% financing for up to 72 months or factory cash assistance up to $5,000. An exclusive Formula Nissan discounts make this the easiest, best time to drive a new Nissan for less.
And Formula Nissan is the only place you'll find these savings. And find out why we're consistently ranked among the top Nissan dealers in Vermont.
Only at Formula Nissan on the Barry Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut and at FormulaNissan.com.
Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
Financing and approved credit, cash assistance on select vehicles. See dealer for details.
All right, we're back. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to some folks from Campaign for Vermont. Cyrus Patton is joining us. He's the executive director. Tom Pelham was one of the founding members of this organization, which you may, the name Bruce Lisman is the one I think most people associate with it. We're going to talk about the election results. Also going to talk about an effort by the group here to try to drum up some support to get rid of John Gruber. He's that controversial healthcare policy analyst. If you have any questions or comments, you can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Tom Pelham, a longtime public servant, worked in the Dean administration and also the Douglas administration. So what's your take, Tom, on the election results? What's the big message that we are all supposed to get?
Well, I think it's been well trumpeted. What it is that people are just unhappy. You know, aside from this kind of topside, rosy glasses view of the world, people that, you know, on the ground are not feeling very confident about their future. You can see that in terms of median income growth not moving forward, population declining, kids moving away. It's just there's a sense of stagnation and not a sense that the people under the Golden Dome really understand that and are doing things about it. The state budget is a mess. We've been saying that at Campaign for Vermont for 4 years now. The education funding is a mess. The health care bill is a mess. It's just a lot of problems that have been ignored in Montpelier that are now have a lot of chickens coming home to roost.
I don't think a lot of people would argue on the property tax issue, but how do you take from the election results that things need to slow down or stop, say, on the single payer idea, this universal health care idea? Or were you talking about just the website?
Well, no, I'm talking about in general. I mean, here you have a situation where they're talking about a $2 billion additional burden somewhere in the system to pay for single payer. And you look at that large task and you see that in order to implement it, they hired CGI to do the website, and CGI was, you know, part of the national solution, and that's fallen down. They hire this guy, Jonathan Gruber, who was part of the national solution for $400,000 here in Vermont. And it just seems that there's no answers. I mean, we still don't have a plan for single payer in the state of Vermont. And yet, I think citizens in Vermont can look out there and see that the state budget is in a mess. Property tax is in a mess. Those are two made, you know, really large areas of concern. And so, you know, Howard Dean always said, you know, you can't do social justice unless you have a balanced budget. And when people are feeling that there's chaos on Vermont's fiscal front, as there is, and I think Governor Shumlin finally admitted that last week, that this is a 5 to 10 year workout problem, whereas, you know, a year ago, Jeb Spaulding was writing a paper saying, hey, the fiscal ship of state is just fine. So I think people on the ground had a better intuitive feeling as to what was going on and than what they were being told from the top. And they voted that way when they went to the polls.
Explain to me what's going on with property taxes, because you've got about 70% of the people in Vermont who are income sensitive. School budgets seem to be passing. Who's feeling the pressure on property taxes?
Well, even those that are income sensitized are feeling the pressure. What you have is a system that is with a total disconnection between who votes for the budget, which are the school boards and the local voters, and who has to pay for it, which is the legislature. At the end of the session in May, they finally come up with the property tax rates, and then people know, what the tax statewide tax rates are going to be. So at the local level, people know that we can find savings in our budget, but what's the point? Because it's the state tax rates that drive what the spending is. So you have this disconnect. And just if you think about income sensitivity, in Vermont, for those 65 to 75% of the homes that are income sensitized, 50% of their property tax bill on their house in 2 acres is covered by income sensitivity. But then when you think about that Vermont spending per pupil is 50% higher than the national average, you know, Vermonters, that even though they're income sensitized, are still paying at a rate that is quite high. And it's growing every year, despite the fact that the number of students in our system has gone down. And just keep this in mind. The cost of income sensitivity is $152 million. That amount doesn't come out of the sky. It doesn't come out of the general fund. It's paid by other property taxpayers. It is a cost shift from those who are income sensitized to those who are not, including non-residential property taxpayers. So it's a zero-sum game. And I had to laugh during the election when, Dean Korn was saying, well, this income sensitized everybody. Well, if you're going to income sensitize everybody, where are you going to get the money from to pay for income sensitivity? Because it's an internal cost shift within the education fund, and it adds about 20 cents to the statewide property tax rate. So 20 cents of that 98 cents is not for education. It's not a result of the Brigham decision. It is to fund income sensitivity.
What do you think would happen if income sensitivity totally went away?
Well, I think that would be bad. I'm not, if it went away, the statewide property tax rate could drop by 20 cents. I mean, that's a financial result. But the property tax is a regressive tax, and there needs to be some way of softening the burden for low and middle income homeowners who do have a larger amount of their wealth tied up in their home. But, in the Douglas administration, we opposed going from $75,000 to $90,000. It took us 2 years. When I was tax commissioner in the Douglas administration, I was signing checks to people up in Stowe and some of these very wealthy communities who had figured out with their accountants how to play the game and get their properties income sensitized. And it just disgusted me to be seeing my name on a check for $28,000 to people that I know didn't deserve it. It took the Douglas administration 2 years to begin to get a cap on income sensitivity benefits, where we first got it down to $10,000, and then we got it down to $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just that people in under the Golden Dome just were totally in love with the concept of income sensitivity and wouldn't listen to common sense.
How do you do income sensitivity and have people feel that connection to what they're actually voting on?
Well, I think that you've got to change the system. I mean, there are three levels of activity in Vermont's education system. One is a local school board. Two is a regional entity. Right now, it's supervisor unions. And three is the state house. And before Brigham, there was a direct connection between what went on at the local school board and the local property tax rate. It was unfair, but that direct connection was there. With Act 60 and Act 68, that connection has been totally severed. And I think that it needs to get reunited at the regional level.
Totally severed? Really? Really totally?
Absolutely. Total, except for maybe like 10 or 12%. There's a multiplier on the statewide property tax that's based on local spending. But even there, it's not true local spending. It's this education spending, which is a creation of the legislature. It's not audited, and it's equalized pupils. Now, no other state in the union has equalized pupils in education spending, which are the two variables that we use to for the multiplier to the statewide rate. So, they're severed. Effectively, they're severed.
Cyrus, I want to ask you about this petition that your organization's doing to try to get John Gruber's contract with the state terminated. He made some comments I think most people generally agree they were pretty despicable. What's the point of terminating that contract in midstream here? The argument is he's in the middle of doing this work.
Well, part of the argument is that we, as Vermonters, shouldn't be contracting with someone who devalues transparency in government, someone who does not respect Vermonters based on the statements that they've made. And there should be a push to reclaim the fees that we've paid him for that work. I find it hard to believe that there's nobody in the state of Vermont or even other consultants who can't provide the same guidance. And that's really the core of the issue.
You think you could really reclaim the fees? On what basis would that be?
Given the statements that he made, depending on the contract, I haven't seen the contract, but Vermont could certainly ask for it as a statement. Whether Gruber decides to return that money is on him, but we could make a statement that we don't. The state of Vermont does not work with people who do not believe in transparent government.
I mean, I could understand if his work was tainted, but you know, he made comments that were stupid. I mean, I'm still a little puzzled why that would result in wanting to take the money back for work he's done.
Sure. Well, it would be a message. It would be the state of Vermont sending a message to Gruber that we don't tolerate that kind of work. I don't expect him to return the money, but it's a statement.
All right.
If I could just add to that, if you watched Face the Nation this week, Bob Schieffer had a commentary on this, and his point was, especially in the face of Gruber's work in Massachusetts, where he basically said how he finessed $400 million out of the federal government, and Bob Schieffer said you should, as a moral issue, you should give the money back if you really believe that you did it through political manipulation, through a lack of transparency, you should give the money back. I agree with Cyrus. I don't think he will.
Now, you know, Campaign for Vermont has said that it's nonpartisan. Is this partisan, Tom?
I don't think this is partisan. This is, you know, everything is not partisan. You know, a lot of folks in the media like to look at everything as light, you know, left versus right, but there's a center, and you know, that's where we want to be in the conversation. I don't think Bob Schieffer was being partisan this weekend. I just think here is something that offends people, and it is offensive. It costs a lot of money. In Vermont, his contract is being used to leverage possibly over $2 billion, and I don't want a guy at the top of the heap, you know, who has that kind of view that is trying to, you know, lead us forward on the financing. I worked in the tax department. I was tax commissioner. Jeff Carr and Tom Covette could have done this analysis for a lot less money than John Gruber and with a lot more integrity. We're not bound to go hire these expensive Washington consultants to help us move forward.
Let me ask you another question on this partisan question or not. Bruce Lissman wrote this piece for Vermont Digger talking about the elections. Opening paragraph here, good public policy badly executed is no better than bad public policy executed well. The outcome is often the same for Vermont citizens, bad. And, of course, bad ideas executed badly are a special hell for Vermonters. We just reelected a government that has made bad ideas, bad management, and bad leadership seem normal. No whining here. The people voted and returned many of office. A lot of use of the word bad there. But so is that, I mean, is that partisan?
What's partisan about that? It's true. I mean, we have had an administration that has wandered far from the principles that Dick Snelling, Howard Dean, and Jim Douglas exercised in terms of sustainable spending and a budget. They have been growing a budget at 4.5% to 6% over these recent years, and I'm not quite sure you can have anyone sit here at this mic and say, oh, you know, the Vermont economy is moving forward at 4.5% to 6%. It's just not happening. It's not happening in terms of employment. It's not happening in terms of median income. It's not happening in terms of population growth. There is nothing that one can look to say that we could sustain 4.5 to 6% budget growth. That's not partisan. That is Howard Dean would say the same thing. It's just looking at what's obvious before your eyes and seeing that this isn't working right. And inevitably, we ended up where we are. We have a fiscal mess now. Bond rating just took a little tick down, which is not a good sign. Pension funds are still woefully underfunded. We have $130 million deficits coming into the year. Budget adjustments for the current year, fiscal 15, that are a mess. I don't think it's people in the media that like to put the label partisan on that, but we've got to talk about this stuff as citizens, as nonpartisan citizens, to fix the problem.
Just sounded critical of the administration. I think it's fair to ask whether it's a partisan attack or not.
The question's fair, but I think the answer is no, it's not. It's looking at reality, and if everything was hunky dory and our state budget wasn't in a mess, we probably wouldn't exist as an organization. We exist because there is this partisanship. There's right wings and there's left wings, and they're duking it out, and there's no one in the middle trying to represent fair play and common sense.
Talking with Tom Pullum and Cyrus Patton, a campaign for Vermont. Want to add something to that?
I do. Mark, we have to get past this idea that there's only a left and right. And as Tom was describing, we're there in the middle. I think Vermonters are there in the middle, by and large, and we can't succumb to this idea that you have to be a left or right, Democrat, Republican. Until we can start talking about these ideas without that partisan filter, we're not going to make any progress.
Let's go to Williamstown. Rama, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, listen, I want to go back to this Gruber thing real quick, because I don't know Gruber from a hole in the wall, so this is not a defense of him personally. But that said, I haven't seen anything that Gruber said that was dishonest. I haven't seen anything that says his numbers were fudged. What I did see was him saying, and people may be insulted by the terminology he used, especially the stupidity of the American voter phrase, which sometimes I think is quite apropos. But what he did reveal is a sausage-making process where it was people who passed the laws, not Gruber. Gruber did not pass the law. He's not the one that changed the phrasing for the law to make people think they were passing something that may not have been. And I think rather than get rid of somebody like Gruber, he's one somebody who you want around, and you don't want to muzzle him. You want to let him speak plainly, because he did speak. He did reveal what was going on behind the scenes and in the sausage-making machine. And we would all lose out by having somebody who has the courage of Gruber.
Okay.
Getting rid of him.
Let me have our guest comment. Thanks.
Well, I would just point to what has happened since these remarks came out, and Gruber has tried to walk them back. I mean, he's apologized for what he said. And by his own admission, he was not saying good things about what he had said before. And I do think he, has said, we know that it was a sausage-making effort. You can go back to what Nancy Pelosi said about, first you got to pass the bill, but before you can know what's in it. And he was part of that sausage making by his own admissions. And what he did in Massachusetts, he was proud that somehow he maneuvered the federal government to pay $400 million for Massachusetts' approach to this. And kind of implying he did it through manipulation and kind of artifice. So I think from folks on the left, some of them, Howard Dean, folks on the right, certainly, and centrists like Bob Schieffer, everyone looks at it and says, that this guy is not an honest broker.
Lawrence Miller trashed him.
Yes, Lawrence, but he's still saying he's going to keep him.
Let's go to Orange. Dave, good morning.
Good morning to you and your guests. I was curious as to whether either you, Mark, or your guest saw the video posted this morning of Gruber's testimony before the House Health Committee in 2011.
Here in Vermont?
Here in Vermont.
I have not seen that.
Well,
what's in it?
You people should, because this guy and the members of that committee should be fired. Larson was the chairman of the committee at the time, and he read a commentary apparently by John McClary and asked for Gruber's reaction to it. And Gruber asked if that was written by his adolescent children, and everybody on the committee laughed, which I question whether anybody is really concerned about us Vermont taxpayers and all this.
All right, let me get our guests to comment. Thank you.
I did see that clip, and it's, you know, it's a clip. I don't find it grossly disturbing. It's basically Mark Larson as the chair of the Health and Welfare Committee, you know, reading something that John McClary apparently wrote, and Gruber saying, oh, it sounds like something my adolescent child might write. It's demeaning, but it's, you know, it's John McClary is a big boy. I mean, he's in the political flow of things, and it was that kind of a situation. I just, you know, you have Mark Larson, you have Mike Fisher there, you have the staff of the JFO, it was a hearing that it just wasn't well handled, but I didn't find it totally over the top.
Cutting $130 million out of next year's budget. So what's that going to look like at the end of the process?
Well, I don't think they can cut $130 million out of next year's budget. That's why I think Governor Shumlin promptly said we've got a 5 to 10 year problem. When Howard Dean took over, we had a $65 million deficit. That's about 10% of the general fund operating budget. And we didn't dig our way out of that until 1997. You know, the problem here is that the folks under the Golden Dome have lived in the since they overrode Governor Douglas's veto in the 2010 budget. They lived off of 3 years of almost $1 billion worth of stimulus money, and they didn't do any reforms in state government. Then there were some tax increases that passed, kind of rolling into effect in 2011 and 2012, the capital gains exclusion, the tax on healthcare claims and things of that sort, that kind of like plugged the holes there. But since then it's been basically one-time funds and gimmicks, and so now they have about maybe $130 million hole, which is 10%, you know, of the general fund operating budget. So there's got to be a kind of a fessing up on the part of our political leaders. I have an op-ed piece coming out saying that Speaker Smith has really got to reappoint different people to these committees in order to solve this problem, because you continue to reappoint to House Ways and Means and House Appropriations and these other committees the same people and the same leadership that helped walk us into this mess. I'm not so sure you're going to get a different result.
Let's go to Peachum. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Mark and your guests. I thought I'd never be agreeing with Rama, but he hit the nail right on the head. We have to keep Gruber around. Here's someone that's finally telling the truth about what Obamacare was all about. You know, how the politically elite liberals have perpetrated this lie upon us, and now we're paying the consequences. As far as him walking back his comments, he did that after his first comment was aired. He's had five or six since then of the same vein. The guy is telling the truth. You might not like his language, but we need to hear the truth. We don't need all the spin that we've been getting. Thanks.
Right, let me get our guests to comment. Thank you, Tom.
Tom, I wouldn't agree that we need. I would agree that we do need the watchdog function. I mean, certainly, Campaign for Vermont would be the first to agree that we need to be able to speak truth to power, and we need people shining a light on government. At the same time, it's hard to tolerate someone who brags about taking advantage of voters, and that's something that Gruber seems to be doing foolishly out there. But that's where we need to send a message that Vermonters don't tolerate that kind of work.
Let's go to Moncton. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Mark, and good morning to your guest. Hey, I see this a little differently than just right against left. I see this more as haves against have-nots, to the extent that in this state we've got a big percentage of the population who honestly believe that those who have money, and I'm not talking 1%, I'm just talking people making a good living, somehow gotten in illegally or done it on the backs of the poor, And the result is we get programs like the health care and the Brigham decision with the way we fund education. And what I'm talking about is that there's a group of people who truly believe that that we should be taxing those who have a lot more money. What they don't understand is we don't have that many people in the state that can fund these kind of programs. There are less than 500 people or families that are making over $500,000 a year. And that's not every year. That could be 1 year and then there'll be another 5 or 6 years before they make that kind of money. That's less than 7/100 of our population. There's not enough money to pay for the programs based upon, oh, that guy's got it, so let's just take it from him. Eventually, it comes down to people making $100,000 to $150,000. And all of a sudden, when they start paying the bills, because a lot of people with that kind of money are moving out, then result is we're basically bankrupting our society for programs that aren't giving us the results we want.
All right. Let me have our guest comment. Thank you, Paul.
Well, I think Paul makes an excellent point. At some point in time, you know, there are a lot of folks in Vermont that believe that we can just tax the millionaires and billionaires and everything will be fine. And Vermont doesn't have any billionaires, so we have a few millionaires. But the hard facts are that if you look at the 2012 tax statistics, you're in the top 10% of income earners in the state of Vermont if you are if your income tax filing is $113,000 or more. So that's the break point between the top 10%. And that can include a couple married filing jointly. It could be a subchapter S corporation. You're running their businesses through their income tax return. And if you look at the national statistics, Vermont is the fourth best state in terms of the gap between the rich and the poor, you know, where people talk about the wealth effect. Ironically, the worst one is Washington, D.C. And here we have, you know, two state senators that are among the 1% in terms of power in the Senate. And the Senate plays a big role in the management of Washington, D.C. And Washington, D.C. is the entity in the nation where that wealth gap is the most severe. But in Vermont, to go toward, you know, when you look at 113,000, it could be a couple of people making 60,000 each and maybe have a little interest income. It's just, we just don't have this this wealthy band. We have a few wealthy people. As the gentleman said, Kathy Hoyt, former Secretary of Administration, the Dean Administration, and Bill Sayre led a study for the legislature that showed for those making over $500,000, most of them are event wealthy. They're wealthy once or twice in their life. A lot of them are 65 and over, cashing in for retirement. And it's just, there's maybe a 200 or 300 returns where people are consistently wealthy. I know sergeants in the state police that make over $113,000, putting in a lot of overtime. You look at, you know, judges, you look at heads of nonprofits. I mean, if you're making over $113,000 and you're in the top 10%, we're all hoping to place a tax burden on a group of people that aren't wealthy. They're, you know, they're above average, but they're people that we know and respect.
How many people on the online petition on the Gruber thing at this point?
There were 66. We launched it late last night, and just this morning there were 66.
Okay. How long are you going to have that up? Do you have any idea?
We'll see. I'll be looking for a response from the administration. I think that would be that's what Vermonters are looking for. A lot of people are talking about this issue right now, and I'd like to. I'm curious to see how the administration will respond.
Okay. Why did you decide to even do this, the petition?
Campaign for Vermont, from the very, very beginning of our time, has pushed for transparency and accountability in government, and this seemed very close to our core mission of finding good government. So we just couldn't let this one go without chiming in on behalf of our network. Thousands of Vermonters are angry about this.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Cyrus Patton, Tom Pelham with Campaign for Vermont. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. Quick break. We'll get our White House report coming up next.
Attention deal hunters. Traditions run strong in Vermont, and two of the strongest are Vermonters' love for hunting and Chevy trucks. Hi, this is Steve Sace from McMahon Chevy in Morrisville.
And I'm Ed Dever, sales manager at McMahon. Through the end of November, show us your Vermont hunting license and get a $500 gift card to Cabela's with the purchase or lease of any new in-stock Chevy truck. See dealer for details.
At the new McMahon Chevy Buick, our goal is to become Vermont's number one Chevy truck dealer. We've got tons of new Silverados in stock. 1500s, 2500s, many with plows ready to go. We also have a nice selection of the all-new Colorado, the hot new redesigned mid-size pickup truck.
No matter what you're driving, we want to see what you get this year. For the month of November, if you stop by and show us your deer, your moose, your caribou, your gazelle, you'll get a $25 gas card just for showing us.
Dude, no one's going to get a gazelle.
You never know. Check out our inventory online at McMahonChevrolet.com and like us on Facebook for more of our crazy offers.
The new McMahon Chevy Buick on the corner of Route 15 and Route 100 in Morrisville. We make deals the other guys won't. Chevy, find new roads.
One day, they're playing grown up. The next day, they are one. And as time goes by, the cost of college continues to rise. You know that college is important, but the expense may seem out of reach. We can help. I'm Edward Jones, financial advisor David Babick. Let's work together on...